So where will we live after COVID-19? Architect, city planner, visionary Vishan Chakrabarty has long pushed in his books and TED Talks for more people to live in well-designed, dense cities because, he says, urban living is the greenest and most sustainable choice one can make to save the planet. But cities, think New York, Houston, were some of the hardest hit by COVID-19. We read of people leaving to escape that crush of humanity that drew them there in the first place. Vishan Chakrabarty is founder of the New York-based POW firm, Practice for Architecture and Urbanism. He ran the Manhattan Office of City Planning right after 9/11. He's now dean of the College of Environmental Design at Berkeley and joins us from Berkeley. Vishan, people think of cities as heat islands that waste energy. Make your case.
Sure. So, you know, it really starts with a much simpler idea, which is the village. People live together, and most importantly, that they walk from place to place, right? Like a small village. And it's the same thing is true with our big cities. Most people who live in big cities actually just use a lot less carbon because they walk most places. They tend to live in apartments that heat and cool each other. It's true that cities are heat islands, but that's also because of the numbers of people who live there. So there's about 7 billion people on the planet today. There'll be about 10 billion by 2100. How can those 10 billion people live on the planet given the limited resources that it has? And what I'm arguing is if most of those people live in denser circumstances, not just big cities, but just in more walkable places where they're driving less and they actually know their neighbors more, that they'll probably end up leading healthier lives and more sustainable lives. And we have a lot of data that backs that up, but I think it's also about human culture and who we've always been as a species.
You say people are healthier when they walk, true, happier, because they walk and see people. They're not part of that suburban isolation where you go from your little house to your car to your cubicle and don't see people. They are more productive. They walk or take trains, adding hours to the workday that they're not spending in a commute. But you also talk about how big cities subsidize the suburbs. How so?
Well, they do. I mean, the data is fairly clear on this. In the United States, about 97% of the GDP comes about from about 3% of the landmass. That's not to be disrespectful of all the agriculture that goes on all across the nation. It's incredibly important. But where most of our tax base is generated from is in our big cities. And they do cross-subsidize a lot of the social safety net in a lot of the more rural parts of our economy. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that on its face, but I think we've got to like get rid of the stereotype that it's actually the reverse, that it's our cities that draw down on all of this sort of public money. Mm-hmm. New York City generates about $1.5 billion of GDP per block. And like when you talk about pandemic and pandemic recovery, for instance, the mass transit systems that are in trouble right now, the school systems that are in trouble right now, the huge housing crisis we're going to have in our cities. We're going to need public money to support those things. And we should understand that if we rebuild our cities correctly coming out of this pandemic, and by the way, historically, cities have always bounced back from pandemics. And it's, you know, a lot of our modern sewer systems and zoning codes come from pandemics in the past. And so if we build our cities back better, the idea will be that those investments will be invaluable to everyone because if our cities are more prosperous, our countries are more prosperous.
Again, because you say cities subsidize parts of the country with taxes and adding to the GDP. But you also say the government in many ways subsidizes our love of cars. Gas should be about $10 a gallon.
When a factory pollutes a river, we ask the factory to clean up the river. Right? Economists call that a negative externality. Most economists will tell you that when people drive, they have a huge impact on the rest of us in terms of pollution and congestion. If they paid the actual cost, they'd be paying a lot more for gas. They'd be paying a lot more in taxes. We've been doing this since the 1950s. It was a strategy back at that time to suburbanize the population. And so I'm not talking about removing people's choices. And I think that's when things get really political. I believe people should live where they want to live, but you should have to really pay for the cost of your lifestyle. And if we just like balance the playing field, I think a lot of young people would gravitate back towards those cities.
I think that's the direction they have been going in, right?
Young people have not just been gravitating towards the New Yorks and the Bostons and the San Franciscos, which have became obscenely expensive in the last 10 years. But we've seen a new kind of urban homesteading in Kansas City and San Antonio, Texas, and Buffalo, and what planners used to call second-tier cities have had a huge resurgence. We're seeing fewer and fewer people get driver's licenses. I think people are even questioning, like, is this the way you really want to raise a kid, shuttling them from McMansion to soccer practice in a huge minivan? It's not that pleasant for the people involved. There's more racial segregation. There's more intergenerational segregation. And so I just think a lot of young people are voting with their feet and they're saying we want a different life than what like this 1950s paradigm laid out for us.
Well, so we're speaking now in this pandemic, in this time of COVID. Is that still true? Because we are hearing of people leaving New York City, of entire buildings that house, you know, corporations empty.
I think it's exactly the right time to be thinking about density because I am not arguing for the polluted, congested, substandard cities that a lot of people have had to contend with. I'm saying this is an inflection point in history, and we should be thinking about a different, better, more equal, more prosperous, more sustainable kind of city. I was planning director for Manhattan in the years that followed 9/11, and there was the same talk back then that everything was going to suburbanize, no one wanted to live in cities, and we had one of the biggest building booms in cities in our history. Same thing after 1918, you of course had the boom of the 1920s. To me, the question is how we bounce back. We're doing an affordable housing project for a pastor who lost over 100 congregants to COVID. How can we make the investments in our cities, mass transit, food, public health infrastructure, housing, that make our cities more equitable and more sustainable? All around California, Los Angeles is densifying around subway stations with five-story housing. So it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, but it is this idea that we need to create a world that's less car-dependent. It is a prosperity thing. We know from university towns that when people walk around, bump into each other, they actually create new companies and new ideas. Every city's got to look at itself and say, what would work for us? But I don't think they can do it alone. I think this is a moment where the federal government could step in and say, this is the right place to build more light rail, build more mixed income, affordable housing. So you create those magnets that bring people back and give those young people who are looking for choices, choices.
We have over the last several months seen cities demonized. President Trump speaks of them as dysfunctional and vats of violence and infection. It's added to the divide that's in the country right now between people in the rural parts of the country or even suburban parts of the country and cities. Does that make this a bad time for this message?
His view of cities is like some time warp from a 1970s sitcom. He seems to have no idea about how much violent crime has dropped in our cities. But look, the other thing is, when you look at this last election, look at what happened in cities in red states. Look at the Nebraska Electoral College split around Omaha. Look at how the Democrats won Georgia because of the way in which Georgia's urbanizing. Texas, why do people talk about Texas teetering and becoming a Democratic win someday? It's the cities. We got to think about that moment where a blue county meets a red county on the outskirts of Austin or the outskirts of Omaha and think about how we're all going to live together. And even with the pandemic, when New York was hit so badly in March, everyone was like, oh, it's density, it's density, it's density. Look at what's happening now. We're seeing the spread of this pandemic across places that are not very dense at all.
Vishan Chakrabarty, he's Dean of the College of Environmental Design at Berkeley. Vishan, thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure, Robin. Thank you.
And we'll link you to his TED Talks at hearnow.org. By the way, his 2013 terrific book is A Country of Cities. Your thoughts welcome. Send an email to letters@hearnow.org.